This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn. I'm Chua Eun Teik. Malaysia in Troubled Times, Challenges, Difficult Decisions, and the Malaysian Economy is a compilation of articles written by Shankaran Nambiar between late 2014 and early 2016. Nambiar, who is a senior research fellow at the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research, joins me now to talk about this book. Dr. Nambiar, welcome.
Thank you, Derek. Thank you very much.
So why did you wanted to compile these articles into this book? What was the story that you wanted to tell?
I think the time period that I chose was one where Malaysia was facing a number of challenges. These were challenges that were being faced in a number of dimensions. Of course, the domestic economy was going through challenging times. There were challenges that had to be faced. There were also rapid shifts that were happening in geopolitical terms. I tried to capture some of it. There was also the policy dimension, which I wanted to capture. Now, although the primary focus, I would have liked the primary focus to have been purely on the economic dimension, but I don't think that really makes a lot of sense because these are the dimensions that I've just mentioned. They feed into the economic dimension, and any story that one tells about the economy sans the regional dimension, global dimension, or some of the policy issues without due consideration of these factors, I think you have a partial story. So that was the reason why you have these three sort of blocks or big themes within the book.
Yeah, the three themes were macroeconomic outlook, regional shifts, public policy, and the big picture, which is your take on what we should be focusing on in the final chapter. These articles first appeared in The Edge and The Sun, and you could have made it a much bigger book because of the nature of the topic if you had wanted to. How did you decide what to pick and what to leave out?
Yes, I suppose many of the topics that are covered in the book have sufficient scope to be developed more deeply, more widely. I could have done that. But I wanted to sort of get a snapshot of what was happening during that period, about 2 years during that period, because I think I thought a lot of exciting things were happening. Rather than spend time going more deeply into it, I thought it would be a good idea to come out with some kind of an opinion within a narrow space of time. I think more than that, as in my previous book, I was really targeting the average Malaysian, the average Malaysian who's interested in what's happening on the economic sphere, the public policy sphere. This book doesn't attempt to be an academic take on what is happening. It's rather a way of looking at some of the more pressing issues that confront us. It's written in that spirit, in trying to propose a way of looking at the world, at Malaysia in particular. The kind of issues that were selected were not picked with the book in mind. Rather, I was commenting on what was happening at the time, at the moment. After a two-year period, I thought it would be a good time to put it all together and to try to get it published. At the time when I was writing it, of course, I thought that the troubled times were sort of over and we'd have a nice fairy tale kind of passage into more pleasant, more sedate times. It looks like the challenges remain, or you have a different set of challenges. But anyway, one needs a cutoff point. One needs to truncate the story at some point. And I thought that the period I had chosen was as good as any.
Well, you thought 2015 was when all the challenges was being in the midst of being resolved.
At the time of trying to select a title, I probably thought so. It appears not. It appears that things are heating up. You have different kinds of challenges. You have different kinds of challenges domestically. You have different kinds of challenges globally. There was no Trump at that time. The only concern at that time on the regional front was perhaps how India and China would play on the regional stage and how these three countries would probably interact and decide on outcomes in a manner of speaking, which would affect Malaysia. And of course, a big part of the focus at that point was on the TPP, because we sort of labored through it. We spent a lot of energy getting through it, and there was a lot of debate. There were very strong views on both sides of the picture. And at that point, it seemed to me that we had done a great job in getting the TPP through. We managed to preserve a lot of the most sensitive issues and have it was sort of it was a victory of sorts. We had the cake and we could eat it. Looks like it's turning in quite a different direction right now. And on the way in which India, China and the US are interacting and how it impacts on Malaysia, I think that too has taken quite a different turn. China or Malaysia's relationship with China has sort of strengthened, and I suppose that's one way of looking at it, in recent times, and it adds a different flavor to the confluence of forces that would be acting on Malaysia in the near future, perhaps even in the midterm.
Reading it in 2017, it looks like when I was going through the book, it felt as though you were describing Malaysia going into very strong headwinds. And it felt as though you were saying that these were the root cause for what we are seeing today. And would that be a wrong interpretation?
I think if one were following what's happening now, and I certainly am, I'd have a different story to tell, a different story in the sense that I'd pick different points of interest. For instance, today I'd be more interested in Trump. I'd be more interested in looking at what kind of a role China is going to play, how that would impact on Malaysia. I'd also have a very different take on flashpoints within the economy, domestic economy. At the time of writing, perhaps I was concerned about the fiscal situation that Malaysia was going through. I also was therefore concerned about the kind of budget that came out. Today, I'd probably have to look at a different set of issues. I'd probably want to look at interest rates. I'd probably want to look at the debt situation in Malaysia. So I suppose the kind of issues that I deal with don't really allow one to come out with a very comfortable story where everything is settled and everyone lives happily ever after. I suppose it's easy. It would be easier to write a story like that, but then I suppose it runs out of relevance pretty soon. You probably have seen, have read what several commentators have been saying, and they're always saying the fundamentals are fantastic. Malaysia is doing extremely well, and although I don't doubt it, I don't deny that there are some very good things that are going on. I wouldn't downplay the risks, and I think. It would be wrong to think that I'm being negative about the economy. That would be an incorrect reading. And I actually think that there are a lot of great things that are going on. There's a lot of scope for improvement. The upside is pretty good. But I'm not trying to deny that there are difficulties that have to be overcome. So in a sense, I'm trying to get across a message that is at the same time, positive and cautious. I suppose that's as objective as one can get when you're talking about the economy, when you're talking about the political forces that are acting on the economy.
I'm speaking today to Shankaran Nambiar, Senior Research Fellow at the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research. We're talking about his new book, Malaysia in Troubled Times, Challenges, Difficult Decisions, and the Malaysian Economy. I'll ask him about the lessons we learned from 2015 after the break, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, this is Live and Learn. I'm Chua Untik. My guest today is Shankaran Nambiar, author of a new book called Malaysia in Troubled Times, Challenges, Difficult Decisions, and the Malaysian Economy. Nambiar is also a senior research fellow at the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research. It's a snapshot of Malaysia's progress in 2015. What is the lessons then from 2015 that we can take?
I think the big lessons really come towards the end of the book, where I've borrowed this term from Nassim Taleb, and I talk about anti-fragilizing the economy. I think you really need to have an economy, or you really need to work on your economy as if you're under threat, as if the worst is going to happen, as if you're going to be hit by unpredictable surprises, and you'll have to find some way of overcoming them. I think that that's really where we should be heading. Now, if you took, for instance, education, which is a big hot topic right now, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have imagined that the public universities would have their budget slashed. Today, that's happening. That's real. 20 years ago, they were sacred institutions and no one would ever think of having their budgets cut. Same with the price of oil. 10 years, 15 years ago, we were quite happy with the price of oil. We were quite happy setting up Petronas. And at the back of the minds of policymakers, I suspect there must have been a sense of complacence. There must have been the sense that we are backed by these reserves and it will see us through our future. I think if quite a different attitude had been adopted, if one were to be cautious of the future, be better prepared for the kinds of shocks that were happening. And if one had in mind that anything could go wrong, then I suppose there would have been more care about the funds that were coming in, how they were spent. And perhaps policymakers might have taken a more prudent view, a more cautious, maybe even a more frugal view of these funds that were flowing in. And also for education, I think the signs were out there that public education could not forever depend on public funding. This was not really structured into their way of thinking 15 years ago, 20 years ago. But the situation has become one where one has to be more cautious. And unfortunately, I think market forces will have a greater say, will play a more important role in education. Ideally, of course, I think it would be good if education and healthcare, for instance, could be fully funded by the government. I mean, that happens in a lot of European countries, which of course have a very different tax structure and all the rest of it. That is of course one way to go. But the other way to go would be to be better prepared to face the vagaries of the market. And I think that's something that we'd have to be looking out for.
You wrote in the preface that a new policy mindset is required for Malaysia to meet its challenges. Are these kind of the ideas that we should be more focused on, being more frugal, being more mindful of the challenges that we did not anticipate that would come? Are we adopting it already?
I think a lot of the overall story or the prescription comes towards the end of the book, where I talk about the big picture, the kind of big picture that we need to have. It seems to me, in a sense, that we are trying to face these challenges in a rather ad hoc fashion. Part of it might be because things are changing so rapidly. But even so, I think we need to step back and prepare a wider picture of the way in which we are going to handle the next 20 years or so. And I'm not suggesting that you should come out with another plan, because I think another plan document would very much be a repetition of all the plan documents that you have. But I think you do, at the same time, do need a mindset. Prepare yourself in a way which allows you to confront the future. And with the global economy, the world going through rather abrupt changes and things that you probably couldn't think of, wouldn't have anticipated 10 years ago, I think you need to be able to come up with a picture, a way of looking at the world, a way of handling policy dilemmas, which would allow you to be more nimble. And I'm not sure if we've come there yet. Once again, during Obama's time, Southeast Asia was very much a focal point of his policy. It looks like that's not going to be the case now. So that, for instance, is going to raise a number of issues. How are we going to handle our trade policy? How are we going to handle what could happen if the Fed raises its interest rates a number of times next year? What if funds for the for public education have to be cut further? And what is, I think, very worrying for me is the cost that healthcare is going to take that doesn't seem to have occupied a lot of discussion and debate. What direction are we going to go as far as healthcare is concerned? What kind of health financing are we going to look at? I think we need to be prepared for these challenges.
You said earlier that you had the average person in mind when putting this book together. And so let me ask you a layman question then. Malaysia in Troubled Times, it's not hard for the person on the street to relate to that title. And we often gauge the well-being of the economy by measuring the ringgit's performance against the US dollar. Is that wise or correct thing to do?
There are two parts to the question. One is your reference to the fact or my claim that it's targeted at the average person. I suppose it's not the very average person. It presumes that you're following what's happening on the economy and that you have an interest in engaging with what's happening. As far as the second question goes, your reference to the ringgit, I'd be very reluctant to point to one particular indicator as something that encapsulates the way the economy in its entirety is functioning. Of course, we don't like the ringgit to keep dropping. We'd rather have a very strong ringgit. But once again, that raises questions on how we're going to handle the volatility. What are we going to do to handle a situation where there is either continued volatility and or a slide in the value of the ringgit? I think these are two separate issues. I would think that the policymakers would be in a position to handle these issues, difficult as they might be. And my confidence comes from the fact that the ringgit in particular it's not really a surprise. You see it happening. You could have foreseen it happening. it's been happening over a number of years that we've been moving from 3.8 to whatever it is today. I think it's 4.46 or something of the sort. It hasn't been happening in a flash of a second. So one could have taken enough precaution, or one could orient one's policies in a way to support the way the ringgit is going, and to take the right kind of action. Having said that, I think the economy and the position of the economy within the larger global picture is what is of greater concern to me, because the global picture is one that is fairly rocky. You have different administration in the U.S. You have a Europe which is grappling with a number of issues. You have the possibility of more exits from the EU. You have China, which is keen on playing a different kind of role. And although that on the last point, China's role is probably not something that would unfold in the next couple of years. I think it's going to be something that we have to be more concerned about over a longer stretch of time. And the same goes for some of our domestic issues. What would our what kind of policies are we going to take to improve productivity, efficiency within the country? Given the context that we now have a more competitive, in a sense, ASEAN, we want to be ahead of the rest of the pack. And that's not going to be, I think, as easy a race as it was in the 60s or 70s. Things have changed tremendously. The question is whether we have really kept up with the times, and whether we are in a state of being to be as competitive, perhaps more competitive than our regional partners.
We've been through economic setbacks and times of volatility before. Would you go so far as to say that this is unprecedented?
No, I don't think it's unprecedented. I think we've gone through the 97-98 crisis. And I think that was perhaps, to my mind, that was a more difficult crisis to happen. Largely, I think, because it was something that wasn't expected at that point. And we had very difficult decisions to deal with at that point, to peg or not to peg, to accept IMF assistance or not to do it. Here we have a slight advantage, and we have the advantage of time, because it's as if the scene is gradually unfolding before us. That gives us adequate time to be to take the right sort of measures, and I think the kind of measures that Bank Negara has taken will, to a large extent, be able to soften the kind of shocks that we are experiencing.
Why does that option not come to play this time around?
You don't have a very difficult situation. You don't have a sort of an explosive, sudden situation which needs very quick resources to grapple with. You don't, or rather, it's not a very drastic situation that you're in. So that gives you the advantage of time to be able to introduce measures which are not which do not need to be drastic. I suppose you need to use drastic measures for drastic situations. And I think we've learned our lesson from the last crisis, the 97-98 crisis, that it's not always a good idea to go against the market. And I think a very interesting statement came out from the second finance minister, who doesn't seem to be very fond of controls of these sorts. He seems to be very pro-market oriented, and he thinks that if you want to be a part of globalization, then you have to learn to deal with these global shocks. And I think that for me is a very wise way of looking at things. I think the effects of the PEG in 97 remained with us for a fairly long period. It sort of destroys or diminishes investor confidence. I don't think we're going to head in that direction this time. And in any case, I don't think the situation is drastic enough to demand measures as drastic as that.
From what I gather from the book, you are also of the opinion that the fundamentals of the economy, our Malaysian economy, is strong and that the currency is undervalued. But the ringgit performance today is a reflection of people's confidence towards the currency. And so if we do not address that confidence aspect and we do what is the right thing to do to balance the books, to be fiscally conservative, fiscally responsible, the GST is one of those policies that is very unpopular because it hurts the wallet. And we do not address the confidence aspect of that equation, which would be populist. Is that wise to not look at that confidence aspect while addressing some of the deficits in our economy?
I think you have got the equation right. I think, yes, there are two important aspects to handling the situation. One is, of course, working on fundamentals. The other one is on ensuring that confidence, that there is confidence in the economy. Now, I think on fundamentals, it's become kind of difficult to comment on fundamentals. One is not really sure what is meant by strong fundamentals. Everyone has a different take on fundamentals. And even when the economy is not doing well, you have a number of commentators who are saying the fundamentals are fantastic. They were telling you that in 2013, and they were telling you that in 2014 when the economy wasn't doing so well. And they told you that in 2015, and they probably will keep telling you that regardless of what happens. One is not really sure what fundamentals they are referring to. The question of confidence is a little more fuzzy. It's a little more amorphous. Because there is no one thing that you could do to ensure that there is confidence, investors, that the populace has on the economy. And one could try to induce an element of confidence or to spur up this confidence, but I suppose it will have to be multi-pronged. You'd have to ensure that this is dealt with from a number of directions. You need to have good governance. You need to ensure that that sentiments about the future are good. So it's a more difficult problem that you'd have to tackle. And then there is also the question of crime, corruption. The question of confidence is like the tentacles of an octopus. You have multiple arms that you have to deal with. And more than that, I think perceptions are difficult to handle because one could paint a negative picture of the economy. And if that is done often enough, it sort of gets embedded in one's psyche. Now, if there is some basis for it, or if there is adequate suspicion or grounds that confidence is not strong, then it assumes an air of reality. And that, I think, is the more difficult problem to handle. And I think in the next few years, that is really one of the challenges that will have to be dealt with head on. If there is a sense, now even if you stick to your fiscal deficit targets, that's a very good thing because then the creditors are sure that you're going to pay your debts, that there won't be a default. But if there is suspicion that the political situation is shaky, if there are doubts, real or perceived, that there could be a change in regime or there could be a different way of doing things that might not be business friendly. These are some instances hypothetical instances that I could give you at this moment. Then I suppose the whole issue of confidence would see a shaking up. And that need not be terribly helpful. I suppose in a more sedate times, it'd be less of a problem to handle. But with all these quick shifts that are happening, I think when investors have to choose one country over another, the issue of confidence could make a difference on how they perceive countries. Not necessarily because the growth story is negative, but I suppose these fault lines become more obvious in difficult times, in times of crisis. Something that could be better handled or better managed sort of gets magnified when an economy or when you're going through a regional or a global crisis.
What would you be looking out for in 2017?
Oh, I suppose very exciting times. I'd like to see what impact Trump will have for Malaysia. And I expect that this might be an election year. So I think that will also roll up some amount of excitement. And of course, we have a tighter fiscal situation. So as I've mentioned earlier on, you have this the kind of policies that are being taken to handle spending on education. I'd like to see how that is followed through. This is a year that hopefully will not spring a lot of unpleasant surprises, but I think there won't be any lack of excitement.
Thank you for speaking to us.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
Shankaran Nambiar is the author of Malaysia in Troubled Times, Challenges, Difficult Decisions, and the Malaysian Economy. You can get it now at bookstores. You're listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.